Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. I have to welcome again our new affiliate station. I love it. WLRI 92.9 FM in Lancaster and Chester Counties, Pennsylvania. Lanchester, welcome. I love our AM and FM affiliates throughout the country. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer the annoyance of otitis media if I heard the words, "You missed today's show." Lead and matching gifts. Professor John List from the University of Chicago chairs the economics department and founded the Science of Philanthropy Initiative. No longer must fundraisers rely on tradition and conventional wisdom in campaign planning. You have rigorous science to guide you around lead and matching gifts. How big should a lead gift be to impact giving? Will a one-to-one match raise as much as a three-to-one match? That was originally broadcast on February 8th, 2013. And corporate matching gifts. Chuck Longfield, chief scientist at Blackbaud, has lots of simple ways to increase your matching gifts from corporations. Tap into the annual $1.4 billion from 20,000 companies. Did you know that volunteer hours are also dollar matched by many? We start with sector benchmarking and go from there. That was recorded at Blackbaud's 2012 BBCon conference and also originally broadcast on February 8th, 2013. On Tony's Take Two, I'm at the Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. And by Crowdster, online and mobile fundraising software for nonprofits. Now with Apple Pay, mobile donation, Crowdster.com. Here is Professor John List on lead and matching gifts. My pleasure now to welcome John List. He's the Homer J. Livingston Professor and Chairman in the Department of Economics at the University of Chicago. He's expert in the science of philanthropy, and his new project, the Science of Philanthropy Initiative, SPI, is funded by the John Templeton Foundation. It's a research and outreach venture, and we're going to talk about his research and SPI's outreach to charities and how you can participate. Professor John List, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you from Chicago. You getting snow out there the way we're getting inundated right here in New York?
Not too much, but it is pretty icy here, so it is difficult driving conditions here, Tony.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're safe in your little office. I like to picture academics. You know, my major was economics. I was an economics major at Carnegie Mellon University.
That's why you're so smart.
No, it's because I was rejected by the University of Chicago. I hope you were not chair in 19... I would have been applying in 1980. I hope you were not chair in 1980.
I was not. I was actually in eighth grade in 1980.
You are, okay. Okay, well, you're a little younger than me. You don't look it from your photo. No, I'm kidding. Okay, let's talk about SPI. This work is very interesting. Like I said in the lead-in, no longer must charities rely on conventional wisdom. Let's start with your methodology around campaigns. What are you doing?
I think that's right. I think when I first became interested in this area, Tony, what I found was that you had a bunch of really good people, a bunch of really good-hearted people who were basing their decisions more on anecdotes and gut feelings
than
the actual scientific method. So when I say scientific method, what I mean by that is a basic experiment. So in that basic experiment, it's always important to have a control group, because then when you have a treatment group, such as some people might get a one-to-one match, you want to always compare that to a group of people who did not receive a match.
Okay,
that's what I call a control group.
Right, that's the control group. Watch out. I have jargon jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. You skirted closely, but you defined control. You defined control group, so you're clear. But
absolutely,
watch out.
Okay.
All right. So we have this is the scientific method. We have a control group and a test group or a treatment group. And how have you been applying this to campaigns beyond matching?
Sure. So when I first started, I was presented with a problem at the University of Central Florida.
Okay.
So at the University of Central Florida, the dean challenged me to start a center to do research in environmental policy.
Mm-hmm.
And what the dean said is, John, you are responsible for raising money to start the research center. So, of course, a first question becomes, if I'm in need of resources for a capital project, what are the first steps I should take? And the fundraisers will tell you, you should secure a fraction of the money privately before going public. So as an economist, I asked the simple question, well, what is the optimal fraction? What I essentially found was a bunch of anecdotes about what that fraction should be.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the fundraising school recommended that 40 to 50% of the goal should be pledged before the public campaign begins.
Right.
Other handbooks recommended figures between 20 and 50%. Right around the same time, the University of Wisconsin was building their Kohl Center, which houses a basketball team and the hockey team. And what they had done in the quiet period is they had gone out and gathered 27 of their $72 million goal. So as you can see, the evidence is sort of scattered all over the place. And I simply asked, well, how do we know which fraction is correct? And very few people had actual scientific evidence to back up their claims that a certain fraction was actually the correct fraction to gather in private
right.
before going public.
Okay.
I then set up a direct mail solicitation, and I split 10,000 households into different buckets or different groups. In one group, I advertised, we're looking for money for our Center for Environmental Policy Analysis here at the University of Central Florida, and we already have 10% of what we need. We already have that from an anonymous donor.
Mm-hmm.
So now another group of households received a different kind of letter. It was identical in all respects, except it said that we already have 33% of the goal. And another group received a letter that said we have already received 67% of the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth group, which is our control group, received the letter, but there was no mention that we have received upfront money.
Okay, and so this was, to your knowledge, this was the first scientific method, rigorous test, at least that you could find, of different matches having an impact on the outcome of giving. And what did you find?
That's exactly right. So what we found is that over that range from 10 to 67%, that the more you advertise in seed money, the more gifts that you will receive. So in this particular study, what we found was that most people gave, and those who were going to give actually gave more. So the more seed money you have, you induce more people to give, and those people who would have given anyways, they actually give more when you have a higher level of seed money.
Okay, interesting. And so you did this work at University of Central Florida. You were then stolen away, recruited away to the University of Chicago for more sophisticated work?
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, there were a few stops in between. I ended up going to the University of Arizona, and then from there I went to the University of Maryland. And while I was at the University of Maryland, I spent a year working in the White House at the Council of Economic Advisors. And then after that, I came here to Chicago to get smarter.
Okay. Well, you worked your way north from two very south locations, worked your way to the northeast, and then the frigid Chicago area. We're going to take a break right now, John, and when we come back, we'll talk about that more sophisticated work and how it all applies to charitable giving. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals Archive at TonyMartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back. We're talking with Professor John List from the University of Chicago about leading matching gifts in your campaign. I have to send live listener love. Somebody in Chicago is listening, John. You'll be gratified to know that there's a listener in Chicago. And also
very
in
good.
New Bern, North Carolina, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Washington, New Jersey. Live listener love going out. Also to Taipei, Taiwan, and Changzhe, China. I don't know how to pronounce it. Changzhe. Changzhe. We're doing the best we can here, China. So, to Taiwan and China, ni hao. All right, Professor John, now that you're at the university, your work has expanded, and you're doing work now with some pretty large charities. Why don't you describe that?
That's right, Tony. After you establish that upfront money is important, you can ask yourself, well, should we be using that money as simply an announcement, like I did at the University of Central Florida, or should we be using it as an announcement and as a match? So, for example, you could say, an anonymous donor just gave us $1 million. Now we will use those funds as a match. So, for example, for every dollar that you give, we will match with a dollar of this donor's. So we ended up taking that idea, which of course is a common idea in fundraising, to a simple direct mail experiment with the Sierra Club of Canada.
Okay.
And what we were interested in there is simply testing the idea of announcing money, which I did at the University of Central Florida campaign, versus announcing money and using it as a one-to-one match. And what we found there, again, we're sending out tens of thousands of letters to households, essentially using the normal ask that the Sierra Club uses. But here, some households receive a letter that has, for example, no mention of this upfront money, and that's a control group.
Mm-hmm.
Other households receive the match. Other households receive the we have some money, but there is no match campaign. And what we found there is that, again, seed money works quite well. What I mean by seed money is that if you have upfront money, that's very effective in generating people to give. But the interesting thing there is that the one-to-one match worked about as well as the seed money treatment.
Okay.
And both of them worked much better than the control group.
Okay. Now, the one-to-one match, this was with Sierra Club of Canada. The one-to-one match, you said, worked a little bit better than the leadership gift announcement?
Actually, the leadership gift announcement worked slightly better, but they were statistically the same. If you look at them through a statistical test, they were about the same.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, and that was a one-to-one match. Now, what do we know about what have you learned about the differences between different levels of match, one-to-one, one-to-two, et cetera?
Exactly. You know, Tony, that's a great question, because that's clearly the next step in the research agenda, and when you look
I should have been a professor of economics. Look, I did. Well, it was Carnegie Mellon. I had no shot having gone there. So, all right.
We always have a spot here for you at the University of Chicago.
I love that. Thank you. Look at this. The dean. No, you're not the dean. No, you're just the department chair. Well,
no, I'm just the lowly department chair.
Department chair. Well, I'll use you for my letter of recommendation. All right.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what do we know about how these different levels of matching compare?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, the anecdotal evidence out in the field is that obviously a 3-to-1 match should work a lot better than a 1-to-1 match. And a 3-to-1 match, of course, is for every dollar that you give, the charity will match with $3. And a 1-to-1, every dollar you give, the charity will match with a dollar. But of course, when we went out to the literature, we could not find any scientific evidence that indeed a 3-to-1 match was better than a 1-to-1 match.
Right. Again, just a lot of conventional wisdom, and this is the tradition.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Which, of course, drives an economics professor nuts.
Yes.
When we don't have any data or scientific evidence to back up that finding.
All right. Here's where we part company. See, I should probably just settle for an honorary PhD from the university because it hasn't driven me as nuts as it has you, but I'm glad it has. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So this time we teamed with a national liberal nonprofit in the U.S., which does political and socially oriented work. And I have to be careful because I cannot mention the nonprofit due to a non-disclosure agreement that we made with them.
Okay.
But essentially the background is that every month they send about 50,000 letters to their regular donors, and they ask them for money. And essentially what we did is, again, we put the households into different buckets or different groups. In one bucket, you had households that received a 1-to-1 match offer. In another group, households received a 2-to-1 match offer. And in a third group, households received a 3-to-1 match offer. And then, of course, we compare that to a fourth group, which is the control group.
Right, no match.
No match at all, which they receive, you know, a typical letter that says, we're looking for money to help the cause, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what we found here is that if you just look at the data amongst those households that received a match offer versus those households that did not receive any match offer, you raise about 19% more money in those matching treatments compared to the control group.
Excellent.
And the interesting part is that effect occurs entirely on what an economist calls the extensive margin. And what I mean by that is that 19% occurs entirely because the response rate went up about 22%. So more people decided to give when there was a match available. They still gave the same amount per person, but more people give when there's a match available.
So the effect is not because people are giving more, but it's because more people are giving.
Exactly.
And then the level of giving doesn't change among all the people who give versus the control group?
That's right. So if you were going to give anyway, on average you give the same amount, but you just get 22% more people to give some money rather than give nothing.
And is that impacted at all by the level of the match?
Exactly. So the other finding that just jumps out at you in the data is that the 3-to-1, the 2-to-1, and the 1-to-1 match groups perform identically.
Are you sure about that? I mean, NASA has made mathematical errors. I mean, they forgot to convert, Fahrenheit into Celsius or something like that. Are you sure about this? I mean, it happens.
If you haven't
double checked your math, I'll understand.
I'll tell you what, I have double and triple checked my math, and I've also gone to other charities, and I've done the same kind of experiment with Amnesty International, with La Rabida Children's Hospital. And what we find over and over again is that having match dollars, really, that really matters a lot.
Right.
But the size of the match does not matter.
Ah, that's very interesting. Very interesting. And contrary to all that conventional wisdom that we were talking about. Okay, so the one-to-one match pulls, well, has the same effect as the three-to-one match. Okay, if you're sure. Okay. What about the one-to-two or one-to-three, where a dollar gets 50 cents or something like, or those types of matches?
Exactly. That's a very good question. So we have now extended that original experiment all the way down on the other side. So we've looked at 1-2, and we have looked at 1-3. And again, 1-3 and 1-2 are the same as 1-1. So at least over the range that we've experimented with, 1-1 all the way down to 1-3 and all the way up to 3-1, we find the same result, that people give the same amount of money. Now, I think we need to take care here, because if we would go all the way, say, for example, to 1-100, if you give $100, we will match with $1. I'm pretty sure that would not work very well.
Yeah.
Although that's a gut feeling. So I I don't want to break my own rules.
Right.
Because that's just my intuition that suggests, if you go that far, you can actually hurt your capital campaign, but I don't have any empirical evidence for that.
Okay. John List is the Homer J. Livingston Professor of Economics and Chair of the Department at the University of Chicago, and we're talking mostly about his work through the Science of Philanthropy Initiative at the University, SPI, which you'll find at spihub.org. And we're going to talk about working with SPI very shortly. All right, John. So now we don't know one to a 100 match. That would, I guess, you would expect that to be different than a 1-to-1 match, but we don't have any evidence of that, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Do you plan to test a match that's that large, just to see if they're where the boundary is that the 1-to-1 effect breaks down?
You know, I would love to, and just exactly as you mentioned, I'm always looking for partners to try ideas such as that one, and I think that's exactly the next step that the research will take, is where does the effectiveness of the match actually break down? I think it's a great research question, and one in which I do wish to explore.
Okay, interesting. Now, you have some evidence of how this works on a warm list versus a cold list. Why don't you describe those and what those outcomes are?
Exactly. So when we think about warm list, the way that we differentiate people in data sets is, a warm list is a person who has given to our cause within the last 3 years. So if you've given $10 or $10 million within the last 3 years, we label you as a warm list person. A cold list person is a person who has not given to our cause in the last 3 years. So that just gives you some definitions of the way that we think about cold list versus warm list.
Okay.
Now, you're exactly right to pinpoint that feature in our data. What we find is that the cold list people are more influenced by the match than the warm list people. It's not that the warm list people are not influenced by the match, because indeed, warm list people are influenced by the match.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not as influenced as much as the cold list people.
Hmm. Okay. And they're influenced in what way? The proportion of giving is greater, right? Because we're talking about more people giving, not people giving more money.
Exactly.
It's the proportion.
It's all about the number of cold list people who give above and beyond the number of cold list people who give in the control group.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Let's move to, let's spend a little time talking about the partnership. We have more to talk about your research in terms of leadership gifts. We've just been talking about matching gifts, but you're actively looking for charity partners to work with, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So, you know, we've just we've just begun. We've just started spyhub.org, as you mentioned earlier. And even though my own research, I've been doing work in philanthropy now since 1998, we have just received a very generous grant from the John Templeton Foundation that allows us more opportunities and more time to work with those charities out there who are interested in partnering with us. Now remember, you're going to have to put up with our craziness because we're academics. We have crazy ideas.
Yeah, you should see, for listeners, if you go to my blog, you'll see John's headshot, and there's all kinds of mathematical equations behind him on a blackboard. It's not even a whiteboard. I was surprised. I would have thought for sure University of Chicago would be using whiteboard technology, but not in your classroom anyway, unless it's an old photo. It's chalk on a blackboard, and you have the... And you use lambda in some of your equations. Lambda always scared me. As I was doing economics, studying econometrics and regression analysis. I don't know why. Just lambda just seems intimidating to me. Lambda. I don't know. There's a couple of lambdas behind you. So
you're.
I looked at your picture.
Tony,
I got frightened.
Right.
Lambda brings up very bad memories.
Pretty much, we're still old school here. I'm sitting in my office right now, and I actually have a blackboard in my office, which has lambda written on it.
You do. See, that's why I'm getting a bad vibe. I'm gonna have to bring out the love crystal here. A couple of shows ago, someone held this crystal quartz love crystal. I'm getting a bad vibe. It's a lambda thing for me. I don't know why. Just since my econometrics days, lambda's giving me trouble. All right, we have just a couple minutes before a break, so let's keep talking about. Charities that are interested in putting up with you go to spihub.org, or how do they get information?
That's right. I think that's a good spot to go to, or, you know, you can actually Google me. If you Google John List, you know, I promise you I'm not the mass murderer. That guy will come up first. I'll probably come up second.
Oh, is there one of those? Okay.
Yeah, you know, John List is a very unfortunate name. But, you know, my email address, you can email me here at the University of Chicago. It's jlist@uchicago.edu. And, you know, we can begin discussions about forming a partnership. Our bottom line is this. We don't charge for what we do, but what we expect is that we can use the data that is generated from the cause, you know, from the telethon or the direct mailer or the banquet, that we can actually use those data when we write academic papers or we do radio interviews or television interviews or what have you. That's really the only cost, is that you allow us to work with the data and push the knowledge frontier in this particular sector, because that's really what we're in it for. We're not in it to make money ourselves. We really want the sector to undergo a scientific revolution, because we believe so strongly in this sector.
Okay, and this can be done anonymously, right? The charity name doesn't have to be
Absolutely.
Used in your research.
Yep.
Okay, Professor List, we've told charities how they can get involved with you. Let's move to your research on leadership gifts. What was that about?
So what the leadership gifts essentially are about is that if you receive upfront money, there are many different ways to use that upfront money. You can simply announce it, as we did at the University of Central Florida. You can use it as a matching gift, as we just talked about. Or you can use it, for example, for small gifts, you know, small donor gifts to give to people who actually give to your cause. Or you could actually use it for lottery prizes if you wanted to link people's contributions to a possibility to win a large prize. Those are other ways in which you could use upfront money as well.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
So what we've been finding is that if you actually link the donation to a probability of winning a prize, that you can considerably increase giving rates. In fact, as much as 100%. And most of that result is actually on, again, the extensive margin. More people are giving when they have a chance to win a prize.
Okay. And how does this type of giving compare with the one-to-one match?
Yeah, you know, this type of giving is in the range of a one-to-one match. So if you're thinking about going out and using upfront money, what we've been finding is that a one-to-one match works about as well as a lottery where you give away a large prize, say $1,000 to one of the donors. It works about equally as well as a one-to-one match.
Okay. These are two different types of inducements. This is interesting because the one-to-one match is conditional on the person giving, and the other is not. It's definite. What does that difference mean?
Exactly. So what we've been finding, you pinpointed a very important fact in our data, is that on the one case, a one-to-one match, those dollars essentially are conditional in the sense that you have to give $100 to have the anonymous donor give $100, where a leadership gift is essentially the lead donor giving money that's unconditional. So what we've been finding is that unconditional gift tends to be a slightly stronger signal to donors than the match gift is. And we think that's because the signaling value of that gift. And what I mean by signaling value is this anonymous donor probably knows more information about the charitable cause than I do. So if I see her giving a large amount of money for the cause, that sends a signal to me that the charitable drive is a good one. It's a good signal of charitable quality. That's what our data point to time in and time again, that the leadership gift is a very important signal of the quality of the charitable drive.
Okay. I want to talk a little about what you're doing next. You have some interesting research that you're working on. Your next project, the one and done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Please.
Yeah. That's good that you bring that up, because this is the project that right now has a lot of my attention. And this is a project that we've worked in partnership with Smile Train. So Smile Train is a wonderful organization that takes care of cleft palates of the youth overseas.
Yes.
So they send doctors overseas to take care of this very dreaded birth defect. And with them, we've developed a program which we call Once and Done. And essentially, it's a direct mail solicitation. But within that direct mail solicitation, it says, give now, and we will never bother you again if you check this box.
John, we have just a minute left. Tell us briefly what the impact of that is.
Sure. What we've been finding, we've sent to about 800,000 people. And what we've been finding is that if you use Once and Done, you can raise about three times more money than you can with the control group. Only 34% of the people will actually check the box. And when you look into the future, you don't actually lose donors. You raise just as much money in the future as you raise from the control group in the Once and Done group. So in essence, you raise about three times more money in the initial mailer, and it does not compromise future funds from those people.
Okay, we have to sort of leave it there. I think you should call it One and Done, though, not Once and Done. You're missing the good alliteration opportunity. One and Done, no? One gift and you're done.
Well, remember, I'm an economist, not an English professor.
Yeah, but you go for the the alliteration. I don't know. It just has more punch. One and Done. I think you should rename it One and Done. But obviously the impact and the outcome is what's more important. John, I want to thank you very much for being a guest.
Thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you soon, Tony.
My pleasure. John List, chair of the Department of Economics at the University of Chicago. You can find him at spihub.org, and he and I will be in touch to schedule the date for my honorary PhD ceremony.
Corporate Matching Gifts with Chuck Longfield is coming up. First, Pursuant. They help you raise more money. That's your objective. You need to raise more money. They help you do it. Their online tools are a la carte. You choose what you need, like Velocity, to keep you on task and goal-oriented. Now, some people would say goal-orientated, but it's oriented. Let's not get into language pet peeves. I'll keep you appraised. And Prospector is another pursuant tool that helps you find your highest priority potential donors, so you know who to focus your scarce time on, all at pursuant.com. Crowdster, they have a deal for Nonprofit Radio listeners. You get 30 days free or 50% off. This means you can try a Crowdster peer-to-peer fundraising site completely free for a month, or get the 50% off offer. That means you pay for a month and get a second month free, or sign up for 2 months and get two more months free for a total of four. Which deal do you want? Let them know at crowdster.com. In the chat window, tell them you're from Nonprofit Radio and choose the deal. Now it's time for Tony's Take Two. I'm at Nonprofit Technology Conference, NTC, this month. Lots of very smart people helping you use technology in all the different ways that I hope you are using it throughout your organization, day to day, you know, way beyond just fundraising, but marketing, communications, and volunteer management, and program management, you know, outreach, all the social media topics, all this stuff at NTC. I'm doing probably 30, maybe even a little more than 30 interviews in the 3-day conference. Some of them that I've got coming are digital disruption, 7 habits of highly risky nonprofits, communications mythbusters, be a Google AdWords superhero, and a ton more interviews, all for Nonprofit Radio. The video and the list of all the interviews is at TonyMartinetti.com, and that's Tony's Take Two. Got to send live listener love. I am pre-recorded this week, but the live listeners, you know who you are because you're listening live right now. So the live listener love is going to you, even though I can't shout you out by city and state. But the love is going. Make no question about that. The love goes. I just don't know exactly which city it's going to. But you know, because it's where you're sitting. Podcast Pleasantries are over 10,000 podcast listeners. Whatever activity, whatever device, whatever time, whatever it fits into your schedule, thank you. Thank you for being with Nonprofit Radio, most likely on iTunes, but there are lots of other platforms. Stitcher, Podbay, Pod Player, and even one in Delaware. Not Delaware. It's .de, not Delaware. It's Germany. In Germany, there's a podcast site that it's podcast.de, and so they're listening. And I saw one in Spain. I can't remember the name of that one, but we've got listeners in Spain listening via podcast. So Podcast Pleasantries to each of the podcast listeners. And of course, the affiliate affections. Where would we be without our AM and FM stations throughout the country? Deep, deep affections to our affiliate listeners. Thank you so much. Here is Chuck Longfield with Corporate Matching Gifts.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of BBCon 2012, Black Blood Conference. We're outside Washington, D.C., the Gaylord Convention Center. With me now is Chuck Longfield. Chuck is the chief scientist for Black Blood. Chuck, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks very much. Your session topic yesterday was Don't Leave Money on the Table, 10 Proven Practices for Success with Matching Gifts. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the very basic. Why should a charity spend time with matching gifts? And these are forms, there's compliance, there's going to be back and forth with companies. Why is this worth it?
Yeah. Currently about a little over $1 billion a year is given by corporations to matching gifts, about $1.4 billion. So about 20,000 companies in America that will match their gifts. About half of the Fortune 500 have matching gifts. They'll match donations, and a number of them will also match volunteer hours. So, for example, if you volunteer at a nonprofit and you work for Microsoft, they'll actually pay you $14 for every hour that you want. They'll pay the nonprofit $14 for every hour they volunteer. And some companies, if you give them a $1,000 donation or a $100 donation, they'll match it 1-to-1, 2-to-1, 3-to-1. So it's, in a sense, it's kind of newfound money. Cost of fundraising isn't all that high. There are some compliance issues and paper forms and such, but that's getting easier. So in general, there's a big opportunity, and I've done a lot of research that has shown that most companies are not doing nearly enough in this area, and they could be substantially increasing their revenue several percent if they pursued some of these practices.
How recent is the reimbursement of volunteer time?
It's been in place for a while now. It's a relatively new thing, but it's been in place for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's worth the small administrative time.
That's right. In the past, the way the process worked was the employee was encouraged to go to the HR department, more recently go to the intranet at their company, get a form, fill out the form, send it into the nonprofit. The nonprofit indicates that they indeed got the donation. They send it on to the company. The company over time has been outsourcing this to other companies to do the paperwork. So it's actually been somewhat burdensome, but the internet and a lot of links now have made this easier. So most employees now are just encouraged to go to a site. They can indicate that they made this donation, and the paperwork is all done. So, for example, there's a company in New Jersey, the JK Group, that works with many of the Fortune 500 companies, and they have a website called Easy Match. And if you use Easy Match, the processing for the nonprofit, for the employee, and for the corporation is made much easier.
Okay, and give listeners the name of that company one more time.
Well, the company actually is kind of in the background, but their website is called Easy Match.
Easymatch.com. Okay,
yep.
Letters E and Z.
No, I'm sorry, EASYMATCH.com.
Okay, yep. Okay. So what was the first piece of advice that you shared on building this matching gift program?
Well, one of the pieces of advice, which actually wasn't the first, but I'll start with it, is to benchmark against your peers. So, in different organizations that have different resources, there are organizations that are probably like yours that realize a greater percentage of matching gift dollars. And so when you're actually looking at the opportunity, so for example, if you're a university, there are many universities now that are matching 5-7% of their total revenue with matching gifts.
Excellent.
So if you're doing 1% and you're a university, you'd say, well, how are they getting 5% if I'm only getting 1%? If you're a public broadcasting station, the good public broadcasting stations are getting 3-4%. But most public broadcasting stations are getting well under 1%. So they can look at their numbers and they can say, well, why am I not getting 3-4%? So it's a good way, by benchmarking, first to quantify the gain that you might realize.
Yeah. And it does vary considerably, it sounds like, across different charitable missions.
Well, it does. And in fact, the public broadcasting stations could probably achieve the 5-7%, but they would need to actually start doing some of the things that comes more easily to a university, like knowing where their people work. So a university can collect that more easily, whereas a public broadcasting station might have more trouble finding out that you work for IBM.
Okay.
But still, the real issue is that if you know how well some of your better peers are performing, you can actually estimate how much money is at stake for you. And then the actual practices are relatively easy. I joked in my presentation that there's a surgeon, Atul Gawande, who wrote a great book called Checklist Manifesto. And he pointed out in the book that if doctors washed their hands, they would get 10,000 fewer patients a year would die of infections. But doctors don't always wash their hands. In fact, a substantial number don't. Well, in matching gifts, the analogy is that if you want substantially more matching gift dollars, all you have to do is remember who matched last year and remind them when they give this year to match again. So it's not rocket science, but if you do it, you actually would boost your matching gifts. There's a few practices like that that are relatively straightforward.
Okay.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag Nonprofit Radio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
I'm Dana Ostemel, CEO of Deposit a Gift, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Want to share another one?
Yeah, sure.
I love these simple, fun. Well, I consider them fun. Simple and fun. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So another one is that a lot of people now are moving to websites to make donations. It's relatively easy to put on your website another line which says that if you work for a matching gift company, please match. And you can actually hyperlink it to the list of matching companies, the 20,000 companies.
Oh.
So somebody, if they do work, they can click, they can look up Apple Computer, they can click on Apple Computer, indicate that they work for Apple, and the process can begin. And in fact, with somebody like Apple, the next thing you'd be directed to do is click on Easy Match, and the process basically would be finished. You'd type in your employee ID number, indicate that you made the gift, and you'd be off and running.
Now, is that list of 20,000 proprietary? Do you have to be working with a company to be able to hyperlink to the list?
Yes. It's a very low cost, and it's made available by two companies. Blackbaud is one. HEP is another, HEP is another, and it costs about $1,000 to license the list of companies, and an awful lot of companies already license it and put it on their website. But yes, a small or mid-sized nonprofit that's not doing that should do it because it's relatively easy, and then the donor is self-servicing themselves. They're indicating it and moving on.
Yep. You got another one like this? Easy and fun.
Yeah. Another one is that if you're a regional nonprofit, so say you're a nonprofit in the Houston, Texas market, and ExxonMobil is a big employer in your market, or if you're a Bank of America and you're in their market, you can actually get their blank form. And if you know some of your employees work for ExxonMobil, when you thank them, you can actually just send them the form or send them an email hyperlinked directly to the ExxonMobil website so they can go and make the donation. And it's relatively easy to determine that some of these people work for Exxon because they might already have volunteered their email address, and their email address might be chuck@exxon.com.
Okay, so really some pretty simple research and making it so much easier for the donor to contact the company.
That's correct. That's correct. And in fact, if you look at the universities that are getting this 5-7% more money aren't doing anything more than these basics plus making sure they find out where you work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are strategies for finding out where you work? We mentioned public radio probably doesn't know that. How can a small mid-sized shop get that information?
Yeah. So probably the best way is that if you're doing phone-a-thons or any type of telemarketing, speaking with your donors. So for example, in public broadcasting, they have pledge drives. Well, when the person calls in and pledges, you simply ask one more question: where do you work, and whether your company matches, and you're off and running. If you do telemarketing, you can call. Sometimes organizations call and thank their donors, and when you thank them, you could ask them if they work for a matching company.
Yeah.
You can buy this data from some third-party vendors. that source isn't so great yet, that that there isn't really an easy way to give them a list of your donors and for a third party to actually tell you where they work. But those companies are trying to get better at that. LinkedIn, obviously, is a source, and so sometimes you can simply go online, and what a small or mid-sized nonprofit could be encouraged to do is just go online and look up your major donors, your bigger donors. So if somebody's giving $500, $1,000, type them into LinkedIn, see if you can find out where they work. If it's a matching company, pursue them for a matching gift.
Excellent. Yeah. I love this.
Yeah.
So I made you digress into easy and fun. Are there other strategies you want to share that are maybe bigger topic items?
No, you know, actually, the ironic thing about many of these things is that they're actually relatively straightforward. You know, one of the things that is more complex and could actually make it easier, but Easy Match is kind of doing away with it, is some organizations can actually take the form, fill it out for you, send it to you, and all you have to do is sign it and send it back in. If you're a national nonprofit, that's harder because there's so many matching gift forms. But it turns out in most cities in America, major cities, 3 or 4 or 5 companies represent 80% of the matching gifts in that area. So in many cases, you don't have to work that hard for it. One other thing you could do, which is...
That would probably be true of a small local organization also.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's just, you know, most of the money is coming from the big employers in town.
Couple of employers. Yeah.
Now, one of the other things you can do, which is kind of a clever thing, is that say you know you have a lot of people who work for a company and it doesn't match gifts, but you may have 20 or 30 employees that work for that company. What some people have found success in is actually just making a list of who those 30 people are and going and visiting the company in their corporate relations and talking to them about, well, would you make a donation to us, either because you'll match your employee gifts or you'll just make a donation, advertise it, and you'll know 30 of your employees are going to be thrilled because they support the organization as well. And so it's another way to engage companies and promote it. And again, universities have gotten very good at that practice as well and pursuing people.
You have just about 2 more minutes.
Okay.
What else? I'm just going to throw it out. And then what else would you like to share around growing this pretty simple to build and scale matching gift program?
Yeah. This isn't a technique, but just to show the opportunity, when I said that there's $1.4 billion donated, that's about 10% of corporate philanthropy. So corporations make many other donations to nonprofits, but about 10% of it is matching gift contributions, $1.4 billion. That is less than, and in most cases fairly well less than, 1% of, when I said that there's a 5 to 7% opportunity. And so there's tremendous room to actually raise total corporate philanthropy, matching gift philanthropy, by $1 billion or $2 billion. I had a question this morning about would that actually lead corporations to cut back on their matching gift program if all of a sudden more people were doing it. And I've talked to people both that work at the companies as well as other knowledgeable people, and they joke that it's still such a small a percentage of total corporate philanthropy that we could easily double it and the corporations really wouldn't balk at it.
Okay.
So I definitely encourage nonprofits to go after this money, and I think it'll be there.
All right, let's take that rationalization off the table then.
Yeah.
They'll end up cutting us back if we do more of it.
Yeah.
Let's eliminate that.
Yeah.
Chuck Longfield is
Chief Scientist.
Chief Scientist for Blackboard. Thank you very much, Chuck.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for spending time. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tony.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of BBCon 2012.
Next week, Rob Mitchell, CEO of the Atlas of Giving. He checks in about how first quarter fundraising has gone and how the forecast for 2016 may have changed in the first quarter. If you missed any part of today's show, I urge you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Where in the world? I'm still ambivalent about this. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, Pursuant.com. And by Crowdster, online and mobile fundraising software for nonprofits, now with Apple Pay, Crowdster.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is on the board as the line producer. Gavin Dahl is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Dinah Russell, and our music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. Yes. It was like, it was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. Plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, you just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.